Good afternoon, Michael Swindon. You are an attorney in Canada, and you have just filed a major lawsuit on behalf of a number of persons in Canada with respect to COVID-19 issues. And thanks a lot for giving us some of your time at short notice, but I thought it was important to understand for our French auditors what's happening in other countries. Because that's something that doesn't actually travel well at present. Information doesn't travel very well. So maybe you can start by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit who are your clients and the merits of your claim.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you very much. So my name is Michael Swinwood. I'm a lawyer in Canada, and I basically have been working for the last 20 years for Indigenous people in Canada. And I should give a little bit of background so that people can understand. I took a sabbatical from practicing law in 1995 to 1999. So for 5 years, I basically interviewed Native elders all over North and South America, from all sorts of different tribes, Algonquin, Lakota, Iroquois, Hopi, Navajo, Mayan, Inca. All over, and basically worked with two specific elders, one in Canada by the name of William Commanda, who passed away in 2011 at the age of 97. And I presently work with an Inca spiritual messenger by the name of Willaru Waita from Cusco, Peru. In 1999, William Commanda asked me to go back to practice law and assist his people. So I incorporated Elders Without Borders to signify my relationship to Indigenous elders and made the promise to work on behalf of Indigenous people for their sovereignty and self-determination. So I've been doing that for the last 20 years, and mostly on constitutional challenges to the authority of Canada over Indigenous people. And in doing this kind of work, we came rapidly to the conclusion that what happened to the red race in North and South America is genocide. That in essence, the definitions of genocide from the International Convention, pretty well all five definitions, the red race in North and South America have suffered: outright killing, imposing conditions of life designed to cause mental or physical harm, imposing conditions of life designed to extinguish a group, sterilization, and transfer from one group of children to another group, which is residential school experience in Canada. So all five have been offended by all governments in North and South America in order to acquire the territory. So in 1493, when Pizarro came to Dominican Republic in Haiti, which then was known as Hispaniola, he read a requerimiento. In the requerimiento, he said, "I'm here on behalf of the Lord of the Universe, who's the Pope, and on behalf of the Lord of the Land, who's the King of Spain, and someone will come with a book, and they will teach you things in that book. And should you accept the crown and the cross, we will grant you privileges and exemptions. Should you tarry in that, we will kill you and all your children, grandchildren, and relatives." So in 1493, that requerimiento is the definition of the relationship between the dominant society and the red race, or the Indigenous people in North and South America. And unfortunately, what happens is it started with swords, and then it graduated to infected land. And now the worst of all is pen and paper. Because with the pen and paper, we write you out. We make you a non-entity. That's my background in terms of the last 20 years.
So these Indigenous people were left between a rock and a hard place, in essence. and they had no choice.
I mean, they had everything taken away. They had their culture taken away. They had their spirituality banned. All of these things were imposed on Native people. And it started, like I say, in South America in 1493, and then it made its way all the way up here.
Okay.
And the root is genocide. Now, you have to understand that in deconstructing all of this, one has to look at authority. And one has to say, well, how did authority get its jurisdiction to do what it did? So then you have to go into history. And then when you go into history, you go, wait a minute. Why is there so much attention paid to Rome? What is this? So that's when we came upon the concession of King John in 1213 that he made to the Pope of Rome because he had been excommunicated. And so he crawled back on his hands and feet and said, I need to be back in. And the Pope said, well, fine, you give me an oath of fealty and I'll let you back in. So that oath of fealty says, by King John, give over the sovereignty of Great Britain and Ireland to the Pope in perpetuity, forever, binding my heirs and successors. And we will pay a stipend annually for Great Britain and for Ireland. And this continues today. And so the Queen reports to the Pope. Now, this is important in understanding the relationship for us in this country, because it's said that we're a sovereign country. But if you read what birthed Canada, it's called the British North America Act. So a piece of legislation from Britain is how we became a country. I don't know if you know of too many countries other than Australia and New Zealand, Commonwealth countries that are created by legislation from the United Kingdom. And then in that legislation, the Queen is buried. In other words, her authority continues in that legislation. Article 9 of the British North America Act says that the executive government and authority of and over Canada is hereby declared to be continued and vested in the Queen. Article 15 says, the command in chief of all naval and military armies in and out of Canada is hereby declared to be continued and vested in the Queen. So our Prime Minister appointed a military man to head the COVID task force, which means the Queen is the head of our task force. And whether she knows it or not, I'm sure she does. But as it stands now, Her Majesty the Queen is the head of our COVID task force. And nobody tells you that. No one
Michael,
tells you.
So the media in Canada, they are not talking about this.
Not at all. I mean, you're the first media person for media who is asking me these questions. The media here is completely compromised. There's no other way to say it. They're completely compromised. They have no independence left speak. They wouldn't interview me.
Well, let's talk a little bit now. So now we understand the background. Let's talk a little bit about your clients. What was the claim you filed on behalf of those clients? Because obviously for the indigenous people, we can actually understand the issue of genocide. You have commercial clients. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think the easiest way of doing this is to say this. If there is a question as to whether or not this is a true pandemic, and if there's a question as to whether or not the testing is valid, and whether or not the vaccination is going to do what they say it's going to do, why is it that no one wants to speak about that publicly? They don't want to speak about the idea of pandemic. The government of Canada, for instance, says in its order in council due to a pandemic declared by the WHO. That's their justification for lockdown and wiping out the middle class, because that's what the lockdown is doing. The lockdown is wiping out the middle class and wiping out the business. And then you'd have to say, well, wait a minute. If 98.08% of people recover from COVID, and there are valid treatments for COVID that are being suppressed, and the media is being suppressed, and censorship is abounding everywhere, and the whole world is under this same regime, you have to ask yourself the question, why? Why? And the answer is, look at the WHO and look at the World Economic Forum, put together 5G along with pandemic, along with World Economic Forum and the Great Reset, and you'll see the whole agenda. And the agenda now is in front of humanity. That agenda is designed to cull the herd, bring down the population, and it is designed to make the elite be in a better position of control. The vaccinations are designed to alter the DNA and likely nanochip people so that surveillance can take place with the satellites that are placed over and around the Mother Earth. All of this is insanity. It just is. And for people to sit back and go, well, I'll take the vaccination and then I'll be able to fight the virus. I've actually heard people say that. I'm standing at the edge of the cliff and going, don't go over. Don't go over the cliff. You're being lied to. This is a hoax. But because this has been manipulated for a long time, this isn't just overnight. This was all attempted with the swine flu. Everything was in place for this pandemic with the swine flu. But they had to have the doctors give the vaccination, and the doctors put their needle down and went, no, we're not doing this. And their plan failed, and they're back. In 2017, the WHO, Bill Gates and Melinda Gates Foundation, the United Nations, and a drug company that no longer exists, sterilized 500,000 women and girls in Kenya, 2017. Sterilization is an act of genocide. Those people are being asked to save the world. Oh my God. Oh my God.
So just to go back to your clients, so you're acting on behalf of a group of clients who are, in essence, losing out because of these, I would say, historical authority that is very hard to appreciate or to understand. And because you work with the indigenous people, you had to dig into history in order to understand where does the authority take its birth, I would say. And to talk about your clients, you're asking what on behalf of your clients? Are you asking money? Are you asking compensation? Are you asking freedom?
Yes. Okay. So let me take one of the plaintiffs. She's a single mother with three children. And when the lockdown occurred very first time, she was downtown Toronto in her apartment for 57 days. They never left. 57 days, three children all by herself. To say what that has an effect on the mental and emotional balance of human beings is beyond anything you can imagine. We have a young man with special needs. All of his conditions are exacerbated by isolation. and isolation that we have put in front of humanity right now, if you go through the 10 items described as torture, you'll see that the lockdown and all of the protocols involved fall within the definition of torture. That in essence, what we're doing is, I mean, you can imagine if what we're looking at is real and substantive, that measures must be taken in order to prevent the spread of something that is infectious, etc. But when you see this level of overreaction to something that is not what they describe and may very well be man-made and may very well be part of a planned agenda, then you have to say that this is torture. You have to say that we're imposing conditions of life designed to cause mental or physical harm. That is a definition of genocide. So as we go further down this road, what consequences are we going to see from the vaccination? And more importantly, there are many international instruments that protect my clients against scientific or medical experimentation. The Oviedo Conference is one international covenant.
That's the bioethics.
Yes. And that speaks specifically of the declaration that you cannot introduce DNA altering material in a vaccination. There's only specific cases where that's allowed, and this isn't one of them. So that's happening. The other thing that's so important is that all of the drug companies have managed to skip the animal testing. What does that mean? It means that human beings are now the guinea pigs, and they don't know it. They don't realize they're the guinea pigs for this. The other thing that's stunning, this is stunning, but the drug companies stand to make $69 billion. They've already made it. Everybody's buying the drug, all the governments, which is the taxpayer, but the money's already made. So it doesn't matter what happens to the people after. And certain jurisdictions are passing legislation making the drug companies immune from lawsuit. Wow. That's amazing, isn't it?
So, Michael, if I may just, but because I'd like to try and get to the bottom of this, how many clients do you have? How many plaintiffs do you have in this case? And do you anticipate this will grow?
Yes. So what happens is we're in the process of the finalization of the pleading in the court, which will then allow us to put it out into the public and then invite public to join. So the kinds of categories that we're talking about a single mother with children. We're talking about an entrepreneur. We're talking about an indigenous man who lives on the reserve. And the story for the people on the reserve and the story for the people off the reserve are two different things, right? But the harms are happening everywhere at the same time. We expect that there will be many people that will want to join.
Okay, so right, you're across, starting with a small group of people, and then you're trying to enlarge it to a class action lawsuit where you're on the basis of a number of individuals, you're, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're really attacking or calling on upon the what you call the sovereignty of governments or the historical sovereignty of governance towards what genocide, towards what other claims you have.
Okay, well, essentially they're claims of negligence, they're claims of malfeasance in office, and they're claims of breach of fiduciary duty. You know, the government has a duty to act in good faith, etc. And quite frankly, I doubt that the government even has put their mind to the idea that they have fulcrum. The fulcrum point for their declaration of protocol is the WHO. So it's due to a pandemic declared by the WHO. So then what did the WHO use as its criteria for declaring pandemic? Does Canada know? I don't think so. I don't think they know. And therefore, there's the flaw right from the beginning. So right from the beginning, their information that they acted upon is secondhand and not confirmed. And if it is confirmed, I'm going to suggest to you that it's faulty.
Okay, so, and so the idea of this claim is that you will you will try and access to these underlying evidence or discovery of this documentation in order to understand how the government took their own decision, that on what merits, what grounds, what facts, because basically you don't have those facts and you're just questioning the merits. Now, what happens if they bring information to you that shows that there is a pandemic, that there is that there are grounds for this lockdown, that there are sufficient amount of grounds? Like if I take the example in France or in the UK, there's been a number of professors outside of you who have estimated number of potential casualties or deaths that you would have if you did not take these social distancing measures. We had heard 400,000 potential dead people in France. Of course, these numbers is way below that, but now the government may take the fact that you have a much lower number to justify the measures. So it's not an easy decision when you're a government civil servant or an elected person to make a decision of this nature. So, but you mentioned to us that there were some, I would say, outer motives or outside motives, like talk about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the drug companies. If we for 1 second stopped about the exercise of power, if you're a governing person in Canada, what you're questioning right now is the fact that they probably did not have enough data, or you've not seen this data to justify this decision.
That's right. There are many flaws. There are many flaws on the chain of activities. That's the difficulty. So that the flaws that occur need to be looked at, and they're not. They're not looking at them. They're not looking at the flaws. The WHO changed the definition of the pandemic. And you know, you have to put the question mark. Well, why did you change the definition of pandemic? So let's go there. Let's go look at the reason why you would declare a pandemic. And then let's look at the science and let's examine the idea of COVID-19. Oh, and let's see the source. Is anybody spending any time looking at the source? No, we're not, because all of this has gone by. And then, now let's go to the testing. Now, is the PCR, what is a PCR? This is what an expert said to me. Don't use PCR and test in the same sentence, because PCR is not a test. It's a tool. And it's polymerase chain reaction. So I take tissue and I amplify it. And they say, all right, if it's set at 25 cycles, it may be useful. But if it's set at anything beyond 25 cycles, it's useless. And what cycle do they set it at? 45. Why? And why did they come up with all these false positives? And why do we have a situation where doctors are being paid? If a person comes into the hospital with a heart attack, we mark them down as COVID-19 and we get paid some money. Or if you get hit by a car and you come into the hospital, COVID-19, why are we fudging the figures? Why do we need to do that? Why is the media saying that the hospitals are going to be overwhelmed? And people are coming out of the hospitals and saying, that's a lie. There's nobody in here. We're not overwhelmed. And everybody else is told to be, but it pops up. There's somebody pops out of the United Kingdom or somebody pops out of the United States. And they say, no, no, no. What they're telling you is not true. These are lies. Why? So these are the important questions. And if I'm going to ask the government, what did you base your decision on? They're going to point to the who. That's not going to be satisfactory. You can't just point to the who and say they said that. What scientific evidence are you relying on? Now, let's also examine this. The head of the WHO was the head of the security forces in Ethiopia, who an American Nobel Peace Prize winner accused of genocidal practices while he was head of the security forces in Ethiopia. And then in 2017, he was appointed the director of the WHO. That seems quite strange. And then in that same year, they went into Kenya and the WHO and Bill and Melinda Gates and the drug company that no longer exists sterilized 500,000 people, women, girls.
So we understand that you're going to seek the government's data and foundation for the decision. You mentioned one thing, that there was an alternative. So we've talked about the vaccine and the Oviedo bicycle sort of legislation, where you're questioning the issue about the injection of RNA into a human being and the grounds for that. There was one element that you mentioned in your introduction. There are alternative treatments. Do you have factual evidence of that, or is this taken from Canadian sort of professors?
No, there's such a vast amount of information available, which puts in question every stage of this, puts in question the idea of it being a pandemic, puts in question the testing, and puts in question the efficacy of a vaccination, and then puts in bigger questions about really what's in the vaccine. Really, why are you doing it this way? Really, what is your purpose? So all along the paradigm here, all along are questions that need to be answered. But there's no debate about this. There's no discussion. It's one thing only, vaccine. Everyone says the same thing. Bill Gates says, unless we vaccinate the whole world, we're not going to go back to normal. Wow.
And for treatments, you've got sort of doctors who will testify for that, for the alternative treatments?
Yes, absolutely. Huh. It's funny though, because this comes down to the whole relationship between, you know, Mother Nature, natural, and imposed health treatments by pharmaceutical companies. Last time I checked, nature was far superior to those who run pharmaceutical companies. Most of their time is spent going and paying fines for hurting people. That's their track record. $2.3 billion that Pfizer had to pay to the United States Justice Department for harmful effects of their products. The Kenya situation that I mentioned. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And this is what we say is going to save humanity from something that they consider to be death-inducing. And 98.08% of human beings who get COVID recover. There's something wrong. And what could that be? This is the big question. There are so many experts on all these areas that will bring forward their evidentiary basis for demonstrating what I'm saying. That there, you would think that someone would be prepared to have a public debate about this. None.
And there's no public debate on that.
None. Zero. Okay.
So that means the media are not. I mean, for a claim of this nature, you would ex- which is, I would say, quite extraordinary, because the grounds and the claims that you're talking about are substantial. I'm not saying that they're substantiated, because I don't have the evidence, but at least the merit is sufficiently wide that you would expect the media to actually take up this issue, and they're not doing it right now. So why is that? Is it because they're locked themselves?
But of course. Let's be real here. The media is owned and controlled by the forces that seek to implement one world order, one world economy, one direction. That's it. So they're all in it together. The elite, oligarchs of the world, the one percenters, and beyond. Listen, when 9/11 occurred, 9/11 was a test run to put fear in humanity. And remember, the day after 9/11 happened, they had a 3,000 article Patriot Act ready to put on the people. And so they put people in fear, and they could do it with a color. If they said the color red, everybody would go into fear, because they didn't know if there was another terrorist attack. And that terrorist attack was planned. It was implemented by the same forces that are doing what's happening here. The same forces are doing this. What happened in the First World War, what happened in the Spanish flu, what happened in the Second World War, was all done by the same forces that are doing this today. I have to say that the Nazis have never left. They're still with us.
Okay. These are some claims that you're making, which are, I have to listen to them. I don't have the substantive fact in order to, let's assume I'm going to believe them for the time being. I'm not saying I'm doing that, because I think the important thing in justice is that you bring the evidence of what you're, of the assertion you're making. Now, let me ask you, if I may, a question. If you were the attorney of the Canadian government, what would you just say to the claim you've just made?
Well, I can tell you what they're going to say. First and foremost, you have to appreciate that I've been dealing with the Canadian government and their lawyers going on 20 years. So they've heard me say genocide before. That's number one. Number two, in Canada, and I know because I've run up against this, there's an idea that there's no such thing as the tort of genocide. So tort in common law is like tort in French, tort, which is wrongdoing, right? Mm-hmm. And tort in the English common law system means you can sue someone for a wrongdoing and be compensated in damages. So you can sue for assault. You can sue for wrongful death. But they would say, but there's no such thing as the tort of genocide. That's an international thing. We don't touch those things. Well, how absurd. How could you say that? Assault, wrongful death, genocide, it's all in the same line. It's all in the same. So if you can show the definition is in existence, imposing conditions of life designed to cause mental or physical harm, that's what's happening. All these protocols, all these lockdowns, they're all designed to cause mental and physical harm. I said it this way. In the Second World War, the Jewish people were marked with the Star of David. Here, you're marked with a mask. The second thing they did was they transported the Jewish people in a train. Here, they're transporting your mind to a vaccination center. And they took the Jewish people out of the train. They put them in a bunker and they harmed them. And here, they'll put you in a vaccination center and they'll harm you. The same thing.
And well, these are some strong things. So what's the actual calendar? So you've already filed a claim, and when will it be heard, and how does it work? Can you explain to us?
How does it work? Okay, the way it works is that we have to serve all the people. So we have to serve the Pope and the Queen, and that's actually not that hard, because in Canada, there's the Papal Nuncio office, and then we have the Governor General and the Usher of the Black Rod, who's the Secretary to the Queen. So it's not hard to serve. So we get them served, and then we seek an early date to have a debate about the government lockdown and protocol and vaccination process. That's what we want the most. So we hope within 3 to 4 months, we will have a date within which we can have a hearing and ask the government to show what they have for data, and we'll bring ours.
Okay. So clearly you have a few months of work up your sleeves. How are you cooperating with international people for this, overseas lawyers or outside of Canada?
No, we belong to this World Alliance of Doctors and World Alliance of Lawyers. So we're working very closely with Rainer Fulmisch in Germany.
Okay.
And we're working with Jean-Luc Duhamel in France. We're working with lawyers in Australia, New Zealand, throughout Europe, Italy, Sweden, the Netherlands, all over the United States. And there's one other lawyer in Canada, Rocco Galati, who's done a big lawsuit in Toronto. But he and I are about the only two I know in Canada right now who are doing this. So I have a team of about four of us that are working together, and then we work internationally with these other lawyers and doctors and scientists.
Good. So, well, Michael, thanks a lot for all of this. What I suggest we do is as this is a really important matter, that you keep us posted on the development. If I may, I'm very happy to speak to you again in the foreseeable future. It's also very important for us sometimes that we speak to the underlying clients. So I've asked in France, we've done some interviews with your underlying clients, if you have clients that are interested, they're party to explain, because sometimes when you have a person that explains the situation with its own words, it's really different than when it's actually a lawyer that explains it. If you have that, then interested in covering up this. I'm also interested in seeing the facts. You know, whenever you have your substantiated claim, I'm very interested in actually seeing those, because the approach that we've taken with François is a very fact-based analysis. We're not letting the space for speculation to enter, and that's why we are independent as a media, and therefore we're happy to listen to you. But and I'm sure you will appreciate listening in one thing, investigating, and getting access to those underlying facts in order to inform people is the foundation of what a good media practice should be. You have to understand the history of law. We have to understand the facts behind this. So very happy to speak to you today. Thanks a lot for taking the time to explain this claim and the history. I think it's a lesson of history in itself, you know, talking about the indigenous claims, which we often forget in the 2020. We often forget where we come from. I personally did not know the full history of how Canada was actually built. So I learned something. And you keep us posted.
Okay, I will for sure. I have your email and I'll definitely keep posted.
And thanks a lot to you and your team.
And okay, thank you.
Have a nice New Year's Eve.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you.